At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Governor Greg Abbott says his top attorney will replace Don Willett on the Texas Supreme Court. Abbott announced this afternoon that he'll appoint Jimmy Blacklock, who works as the governor's general counsel.
Jimmy will bring a constitutional voice to the bench. We need justices with a conservative judicial philosophy who will apply the Constitution as it was intended, rather than basing their opinions on their own personal agenda.
The vacancy comes after President Trump nominated Don Willett for the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans. Abbott says Blacklock could be appointed as early as next month when he expects Willett to be confirmed to the federal bench. The Texas Tribune reports Blacklock will still have to run for re-election next year to Willett's Place Two seat on the state Supreme Court. A deadline is looming for many political candidates across Texas. They have 2 weeks left to file for the March primary. Winners advance to the November election. Many spots are up for grabs, including a U.S. Senate seat and all of the seats in the U.S. House. There's also the governor, as well as all the Texas House seats and about half of the seats in the Texas Senate. At the moment, though, there are several holes on the Democratic side of the Texas ballot. Ross Ramsey is executive editor of the Texas Tribune. He talked with David Brown, host of Public Radio's Texas Standard.
Texas Democrats don't have a statewide ticket yet. Underscore yet. What do you mean?
We've got 2 weeks here, and, you know, somebody might be hiding in the bushes, and you never want to say, you know, it's over until it actually is over. They've got 2 weeks to put together, or at least to announce, statewide candidates and serious candidates for the big offices that are up in 2018. They haven't done so yet. They haven't really generated any conversation or interest yet, with a couple of exceptions. And it looks like, you know, it's almost like they're giving up.
In a year in which a lot of critics, a lot of pundits are saying this could be a good one for Democrats nationwide. Why are you sure they're giving up?
There's every sign that they should be running this year. It's a midterm president. It's a Republican president that should be good for the party that's on the outs. We have a bunch of open congressional seats in Texas. Six members of our congressional delegation, the House delegation is 36 people, so one out of six of them has decided for various reasons not to run again. There's a bunch of open seats. There's a bunch of opportunity. It's potentially a good year for Democrats. Everything's right except for the list of candidates.
You have a pretty interesting one at the top of the Democratic ticket, I suppose you could say, Representative Beto O'Rourke of El Paso.
He's a congressman. He's one of the six that are getting out. He's doing it to run against Ted Cruz for the Senate seat. And you would say this is a very long shot race, except that 6 years ago, we were calling Ted Cruz a very long shot race, and he got into the U.S. Senate.
I want to talk about some races, like for governor, for example, where there have been some Democrats mentioned, or and they've been talked about as possible contenders. You heard some of these names, like Dwight Boykins, the Houston City Councilman?
Some other names have come up. They're going to need to have serious money behind them so that people will know who they are. And they're running against a governor, Greg Abbott, who is pretty popular with Republicans and not really terribly unpopular with Democrats. He's as unpopular as a Republican normally is, but doesn't seem to have any sort of special sauce on that. So that's a tough race. But unless you build a top of a ticket, it's hard for down ballot candidates to get the voters that they need to prevail.
A lot of people that I've spoken with in the past have said, you know, there's something about the way that we talk about Texas politics, though, and Democrats in particular. We're often referring to Texas as a red state. And there's a sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy here that if that drumbeat continues, the Democrats just aren't going to get out there and vote. What do you think of that that argument?
The Democrats have not won statewide office in Texas since 1994, and losing becomes a habit just like winning becomes a habit. The Republicans have this great win streak going. The Democrats have this terrible losing streak going. And until you break it, that's the situation.
That was Ross Ramsey with the Texas Tribune talking with David Brown with Public Radio's Texas Standard. Each year, thousands of refugee children are resettled in the United States. Journalist Helen Thorpe followed 22 such students from Iraq, Syria, and elsewhere during their first year in a Denver high school. And today on Think, she talked with Chris Boyd about one of their biggest challenges, learning to speak English.
Even when babies acquire language, they actually learn by listening first, and they will know what a word means before they can actually use that word themselves in speech. And it's the same at all levels of language acquisition. So teenagers, or even, say, their parents, if they're studying English themselves, will first acquire language in what's known as a silent phase or receptive phase. And I was a little confused by this when I was first in the room because, again, I was thinking, wow, this is a very quiet room. How will I get to know these kids or bring them to life on the page? But I came to see that this was just a temporary phase, and it passed within, say, a matter of weeks or months, depending on the student. And then they would start making English phrases, but in very funny ways that were kind of comical. Their muddled English was super charming, like, you know, listening to a child learn to speak for the first time can be. They did go through these various stages of language acquisition, and along the way, I think they were also becoming more trusting of their teacher and more confident in America. And so by the end of the year, you saw the kids really blossom in terms of their friendships and their relationships with each other, and there was a lot of kind of hilarity and fun in the classroom.
Helen Thorpe's new book is called The Newcomers, Finding Refuge, Friendship, and Hope in an American Classroom. This episode of Think Re-airs tonight at 10, and you can subscribe to the podcast at think.kera.org. While Dallas and Houston have been wrestling with very public battles over their pensions for city employees, Fort Worth has been nursing a pension crisis of its own. KEI's Christopher Connolly reports on the billion-dollar challenge.
It's bad news for the 10,000 current and former city workers, firefighters, and cops covered under Fort Worth's pension plan.
This plan is not sustainable without changes.
Paul Schrader is an actuary with the firm PFM. He helped sketch out the problem for city leaders this month. The big takeaway, Fort Worth's pension fund is on the hook for about $1.5 billion more than the fund is expected to be able to pay.
How did you get to where you are today? What happened? Because at one time this plan was funded, was fully funded.
And that was back in 1991. Schrader says since then, years of bad investment assumptions led to today's trouble. 5 years ago, the city made changes to try to shore up the fund, but it wasn't enough. Last year, the credit agency Moody's downgraded the city's credit rating. It did it again this summer.
It's going to be very difficult for this plan to survive under the current situation.
While Fort Worth, Dallas, and Houston all have pension problems, they all arrived at them differently. And the scale is different, too. Houston's unfunded liability was nearly five times as large as Fort Worth's, and Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings raised the specter of bankruptcy. Moody's analyst Tom Aaron says these cities, though, are better off than their counterparts across the country. For one, Texas has a strong economy, and the state's laws allow cities more leeway with pension changes.
That legal flexibility can benefit the city as it seeks to kind of grapple with this accumulated unfunded liability.
That doesn't mean it'll be easy. Actuaries say better investing alone won't close the short haul. And that means that the city will have to put more taxpayer dollars into the system, or that employees will have to give up benefits or pay more. Most likely, it's a combination of all three. Fort Worth Police Association President Rick Van Houten pointed out that public employees have already accepted cuts to benefits a few years ago.
And now we find our place in a position where we need more contributions.
Van Houten sits on the pension task force and said he wants to see proposals that'll ease misgivings among skeptical police, firefighters, and city workers.
They're going to need some type of incentive to say yes.
You know, it's never easy when you start messing with pensions or when you start tackling the issues with your pension.
Fort Worth Mayor Betsy Price says the stakes are too high to do nothing. Without changes, the pension fund will likely run out by 2050.
We can't afford to saddle our taxpayers with that, so everybody's going to have to come to the table and work on it, because our employees deserve the pension they were promised, and the taxpayers deserve a city that's fiscally sound.
The city's pension task force is expected to present proposals to the city council early next year. Christopher Connolly, KERA News.
Mostly clear skies in store for us this evening. Should be a low around 54 later tonight. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 75. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.